Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the bus here in Maine where we're building stuff. We'll get into that another time. Now, what we're going to do is we're talking with Edward Slavsquat, which is also a.k.a. Something else. You know, do you use our Riley Wasser? Oh, did I say that out loud? Okay, so I just want to know, you know, what name do you go by, you know, in public? Because I've seen a lot of pictures that you'll have up here. Now, he is in silhouette here because he's at a train station, and he has this backlight and everything, and that's not intentional. But if you want to, you know, see what he looks like, boom, that's what he looks like, okay? So we got some slides and pictures that will run. But he's in a train station in Czechoslovakia. Now, let's go ahead and get that out of the way first. Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore. Czech Republic and Slovakia. Give me whatever is you're in over there.
Yeah. First, thanks for having me back on, Ernest. It's really a pleasure to talk to you again. Yeah, I'm in a train station in the South Moravia region of the Czech Republic. I'm in a little town called Blansko. So, but it's a pleasure to join you and your listeners, and I'm sorry about the silhouette. It wasn't intentional.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. That's cool. Yeah, we'll go with it. Now, this is what the first thing I wanted to do. I'll introduce you, but the main thing is I wanted to do a map, you know, and we'll get into this. And the point that I'm doing this, people don't understand really how small Europe is. Well, I mean, it's not that small, but, you know, you have a bunch of small states. A lot of these countries, you know, like, you know, Georgia kicked the crap out of it. I mean, you know, these countries, you think, ooh, the country of, and ooh, and fear, and Germany, and now I'm going, yeah, you put three of these countries in Arizona. I mean, you know, it's really about the entire Europe, including Moscow, you know, the western part of Russia. You go down to the Black Sea, get Georgia, Turkey, Greece, Italy, Spain, United Kingdom, a bunch of the North Sea, Norway, Sweden, Finland. All of that isn't as much landmass as, you know, by God, only 80% of the landmass of the United States, continental United States. That didn't even include Alaska, you know, Hawaii a little bit. But, you know, Alaska would take over Europe, you know, so as far as landmass. So we're not talking a lot of distance here. So it's like I don't know, 300 to 500 miles or something from Moscow to Kiev. You know, this is like the distance between, you know, northern and southern California. You know, I people, we need to understand, the tanks are rolling. The tanks are here. I mean, it's that close. Oh, they have a drone attack. Oh, did they? You have to refuel it in the air? No, they. You know, it's right there. This is a tight, fast, quick. Crap happens. Okay, I just want to make sure everybody understands that, and we'll do a little bit on the map here to demonstrate that. Let me give you a little bit about. Can I just call you Riley? I mean, how many? I got four names.
Just
here.
Call me Riley.
Riley.
My name is not a secret to anyone.
So all right. I didn't think so. But yeah, the original Edward Slav Squat. We got to get that out of the way. What he does is he goes by Edward Slav Squat. Now we got some graphics up here. We'll talk about, you know, different things, but I want to get to this one of the meme that is Edward Slav Squat and what's behind that. It's Edward Snowden. So Edward Slav Squat, you know, in a running outfit, gym suit, Adidas, sitting, squatting down, smoking a cigarette, kind of. Where the hell did that come from? How did, you know, Edward Slav Squat. It's just a pen name that you chose based on what kind of drugs are you doing. I mean, what's going on here?
Ernest, don't expose my substance use. No, I'm no, listen, so actually it was funny because I sort of had this strange well, I'm very curious about Snowden in general, but he actually came to Russia almost the exact same time that I did in 2013. I believe it's if I'm remembering correctly. And he's always been this really interesting character to me because he's been in Russia forever, but no one has ever seen him. I've never seen, like, you know, someone with some cell phone photo, you know, some Russian taking a photograph of Edward Snowden. So where he is exactly, who knows? So he's sort of this very interesting and I would say thoughtful, sort of whistleblower type guy, but also, like, what is this guy's deal? Where is he? What's going on? So I just always found him to be just a funny, interesting guy, and this, the very.
Well, what do you think? He might really be in, you know, some row house in New Jersey or something? I mean,
Ernest, I have no idea.
I know.
But it's just one of these curiosities, right? It's like, where is this guy? And then the, you know, the Slav Squat part is, this is just a very old popular meme, especially even in Slavic countries and not even in Russia, but anywhere basically in the Slav lands, you have this meme of the Slav Squat, which is the guy in the tracksuit smoking a cigarette, you know, squatting near his apartment entrance, just relaxing, trying to, you know, and take in life as it is. So I don't know how I came up to the name exactly, but those are the two ingredients, you know, of my name.
All right, so that's where that came from. Just, you know, so FYI, I just want people to kind of get a beat on what's up. All right, now the main thing that I wanted to do, I'll go ahead and do this now so that we can get it out of the way. And if you go all the way, Finland, Norway, and Sweden is a bunch of land, you know, up in the North Sea, it doesn't matter. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and mark and go to Moscow from top of Finland down to Georgia, you know, include Ukraine, part of the Black Sea. Well, hell, I'll just go ahead and include Turkey, and we're going to map out the coast. Yeah, kind of. I mean, I'm getting a lot of ocean here, but, you know, Greece, go up to Croatia, Game of Thrones. Okay. We go down the boot of Italy, get a bunch of Italy, go around Spain, go Barcelona, down to Gibraltar, get Ireland, all the way across. Boom. Okay, it's about, you know, minus the ocean, it's about 3.5 million square miles, okay? Now, that includes a bunch of the North Sea, the Baltic Sea, the Black Sea, you know, some Mediterranean, Atlantic. I mean, you know, it's a thing. So that's how much that is. Now, if we go over to the United States, I'm using Google Earth here just to kind of give you an idea, because I don't, you know, I knew it was about the same, you know, but I never actually did this. So I go, all right, so we go from Vancouver or North Washington up there, Canadian border, and go over to Maine. Then we go down to Miami. up the Gulf Coast, Louisiana, Houston, down to Boca Chica, Boca Chica, Boca Chica. The southern part of the United States, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, up to San Diego, San Francisco, back up to Vancouver. Okay, now, what is that saying? 3.6 million, now it's not as much ocean, so there's a lot more landmass. So you can see if you take the United States, and that didn't even include Alaska. Alaska, man, and Hawaii, you add that, man, you got stuff going on. So what we want to do is I wanted to make sure you kind of got an understanding of just how much we're talking about in distance when you have wars. You got these wars, and what happens? You know, you're going to have, really fast, rapid. That's why it was NATO was such a big deal, is to have all of this tank divisions and so on be able to repel Russia right away. Oh my God, they're going to come and take over Europe in a day, kind of blitzkrieg like Nazi Germany did. So you put the United States, it covers all the way from Lisbon, Spain, all the way into, you know, the Middle East, up it through Russia, through Moscow, up to the coast. The entire United States is Europe. United States of Europe kind of thing. So I just want people to understand, when we're talking about you were in Georgia for a while trying to get, you know, you had to renew passport or whatever to get back into Russia. Now you're in the Czech Republic getting documents, and you say you're going back to Russia in what, September?
Yeah, should be early September at the latest.
I wanted to get this in so that people understand the perspective of distance. So when you fly from, like, Paris to Moscow, it's like a few hours. I mean, it's like going from, you know, L.A. to Chicago or something. So this is, so what's the sense of immediacy that you get when there's a threat of war in Europe? I mean, does that weigh on people? Is it, you know, missiles launched, details at 11 and you're dead? I mean, you know, what is the mindset of war in Europe? Share that with me first.
Yeah, I think it would depend, obviously, on which country you're in and who you're speaking with. But, I mean, look, the Czechs have a, let's describe it as a colorful history with the Russians. And there is still a lot of resentment towards Russia because of, basically this Soviet-sponsored regime during the times of Czechoslovakia. And so I think some of this is justified. Other elements of this bitterness, I think, is maybe it's time to put it behind them. But there's definitely, if you talk to people, they are worried about this war spreading beyond the borders of Ukraine. And as you pointed out, not without good reason, just because everything is so close to each other. You know, I'm in this town, Blansko, in the Czech Republic. I can take a train, and in 1 hour I'm in Vienna, right? Like, people don't think about this. Like, everything is so close together. So at the same time, though, I would have to say, objectively, I don't see any sort of large land conflict happening in Europe, although who could rule out the possibility of missiles flying into certain cities or NATO bases? Who knows, right, Ernest? It's my go-to motto now is it's 2023, anything can happen, right?
Yeah.
So just because I think something seems impossible, it means nothing, right?
No, I'm with you, brother. You know, that's one thing, you know, to look at the map, I just, you know, did this. You have from Moscow to Kiev is less than 500 miles. And
yeah,
it is and there's a straight shot through some pass that goes, you know, through the mountains here to get the, everybody's got to go through, from the ocean, you go through Ukraine to get to Moscow. So I can see why Russia is like, nah, we don't want NATO on our border. They promised they weren't going to do it, and then they did it anyway. And to say it was unprovoked and so on, that they went and got their bases in the Crimea and invaded the Donbass, which was a bunch of Russians on the East Coast, to say that they were unprovoked is a lie. Whether they should have done it or not, or anybody cares, or have, that's a whole nother thing. But they go, oh, I don't know why they did it. Oh, they're so mean. And I'm going, oh, man, freaking stop your lying. So, as we look at what's going on now, when we talked to you last, it was almost a year ago. And
yeah, about a year ago. Yeah.
It was at the request of one of our listeners and readers, Matt White, and he prompted me again. He goes, "Hey, how come you haven't had Edward on again?" You know, so I'm going, all right. It's time. It's good time. Because a lot of things have happened, a lot more understanding. It's after, you know, Biden had been there a little bit, and we're seeing what's going on and the corruption of, and everything. So it's time to get updated. Now, but I wanted to, you know, kind of sum up real quick, your bio. Now, you went to Russia as, what were you, like 22 or something, 23, your young 20s. You go to Russia because Russia, what the hell? You know, America not being, you wanted to, we'll get into why. But then you started working for Iran TV, which was called what? Press TV. So Press TV,
right.
You worked for Iran Television for a little bit. Why? Because
yep.
I can spell and I speak English. I mean, whatever. So then you get interviewed, you go work for Russia Today. Senior editor, which means, you know, they make you work a lot. So you working for Russia Today, then you leave that and you start writing on your own. That's where Edward Slav Squat comes in. So my first question for the audience before, what do I give a crap what you think about anything? If I don't know why you left America, land of the whatever, you know, to go to Russia, explain that.
Well, I can't say that I left the United States solely because I was particularly, well, let's put it this way. I was a young man. I was very dissatisfied with the current state of my country. I mean, this was in around 2011, 2012. You know, this was the Obama years, which to me were horrific because it, you know, I think Obama was really one of the most depressing presidents we've ever had, because after the Bush years, there was a need for change, a real need for change, right? And what Obama did was he took all the worst elements of the Bush administration and he legitimized it. Or he said, you know, we tortured some folks, let's forget about it, right? It's like, it's all water under the bridge.
At this point, and what difference does it make?
Right, exactly, right? And Obama himself, I mean, you know, here we have the first so-called black president of the United States who destroyed Libya, which was, you know, Ronald Reagan's dream, I guess, or I don't know. But it's, I mean, come on, the irony here, I don't know what to even say. I mean, Libya was one of the most stable, wealthy nations in North Africa, on the African continent. So it was, to me, it was just a very big bummer, because everyone I knew loved this guy. And but again, I don't want to say it was for political reasons. It was also just because I just wanted to see the world, you know? And so, just by pure coincidence, I headed east to Russia. And
but why, you know, Russia? You know, if you're not, you know, enamored with Obama,
yeah,
freaking communism, you
it
know,
was, it
whatever.
Wasn't, it, yeah, it wasn't a political decision at all. And you should remember that
they had pretty women. Was it the women? It's always a woman.
It wasn't the women, really. Honestly,
what was it?
It was boredom. I was just interested in seeing other parts of the world, I guess. And I ended up in Bashkortostan, which is not a place that most people go, and I had never heard of it before I went there. And I had no real background in Russia. I wasn't really interested in Russia, but I ended up staying, and I moved to Moscow, and so I spent about 10 years.
Now you're killing me, man. You know, why not Bali? Fiji, Hawaii. I mean, I'm going to Europe.
I wind up in Russia.
Hot chick, blonde hair, gave me a card. You know, something. There's something that got you there. Don't BS me, man.
Ernest, I would never lie to you, my friend. No, it was pure, I don't know, it was fate, maybe, or I just took a job in Bashkortostan teaching English, and that's how I ended up in Russia.
Okay, so there was an opportunity. Where can I go make a living? I hear that a lot. You know, like James
right.
Corbett and I do a regular show.
Yeah, exactly. Corbett was an English teacher, right?
Yeah, so, you know, he's a literature geek, you know, from University of Canada. He goes to Japan and you teach English. I have another friend that did it in Beijing, you know, and then, Shanghai.
Right.
In Shanghai.
Right.
And then, you know, other people go anywhere in the world. You speak English? Okay, we can teach. But you don't even have to know Russian. What's up with that? I mean, how did did you even do that?
It was really difficult, especially where I was living, because it's not like a place where foreigners were, you know, living. So it was very, very difficult. But yeah.
So you're learning Russian as much as you're teaching them English.
Well, yeah, but admittedly, my Russian is still not that great, I have to admit. But I was definitely learning a lot of Russian when I first arrived, for sure.
Okay. So, you, young man, you were what, 22, 23? What was it?
I think I was closer to 25, 24, 25. So, yeah.
Okay, so 24, 25, Obama's pissing me off. This is not, we had an opportunity. I was paying attention before, and you're doing the same thing. You suck. I'm out. I'm going to go, you know, sow my oats somewhere, find some Russian babe. Okay, so you go to Russia.
Yeah.
Did you have a relationship? Did you make a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever? I'm not judging. I mean, so I just, you know, did you?
Yeah, well, I did marry a Russian woman. I'm divorced, but I have a son who lives. He's in Moscow right now, so I'm looking forward to returning to him.
Very cool. Well, what was the divorce about? Was it just incompatibility? You know, a cultural thing. You know, she what you thought. I mean, was there a cultural aspect to the divorce?
I don't know. I don't know if it's really relevant, but yeah, it was just, you know, these things happen.
Things happen. All right. So you have a tie with the son. You got a tie to freaking Moscow now, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So you need to get back. And how old your son?
He just turned 6 in July.
Oh, my God. What a great age and a bad time to be away. I feel for you, brother. All right. So we're getting you back. So you went to Georgia to get some paperwork to try and get passport back into Russia. What, that didn't work out, so you're in Czechoslovakia. I mean, shit. You know, Czech Republic, okay? I get shot, you say it wrong. All right, you're in the Czech Republic, you're got something going on there, and you plan to be back in Russia in September.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
So that gets us caught up there. Now, the experience that you had at Press TV, Loran, and going to Russia today, I need to understand how. Oh, you speak English and can write? Yeah, okay, you can come over here. So tell me about landing that job, and if that was a surprise to you or not, what you learned there, learned about media. Were you involved in media when you were in the United States? You know, how much of an experienced writer are you? Then you go to Russia today. So this journalism thing is kind of a bug you got, and now you got your own Substack doing whatever the heck you're doing. So I'm just going, okay. So give me the connection there, this stream of thought to have you as a journalist.
Well, yeah, I read out, even while I was in college, I was writing professionally. And when I graduated, I went to Washington, D.C., and I did all sorts of odd writing jobs. In fact, I was reviewing movies for the Washington Times, which is like that Mooney run newspaper. And anyway, it was I had many different gigs in Washington, D.C., but it was still very difficult to feed myself. The starving writer thing is really true. And so I didn't last very long. I just got burnt out and bitter. And like I said, I mean, because I was in Washington, D.C., very sort of the whole culture is revolves around, you know, basically government bureaucracy and politics, and it was quite a disheartening, and it really jaded me, you know, about the whole political system. So I got out. Stay away from me.
I don't need no war machine. Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News update. Former President Trump's bond has been set at $200,000 in his Georgia election case. Trump's lawyers met with the Fulton County District Attorney's Office today to negotiate terms of his bond and release. He's expected to surrender to charges this week. The National Hurricane Center says a tropical system centered in the Gulf of Mexico is expected to bring rain and winds to South Texas.
That is forecast to become tropical storm strength by the time it reaches the southern coast of Texas tomorrow morning.
National Hurricane Center Deputy Director Jamie Rome says the storm could bring up to 6 inches of rain to parts of South Texas. IRS and FBI officials are being subpoenaed by House Republicans as part of their investigation into the Hunter Biden tax case. Republicans say they believe the agents have information on a meeting last year attended by Special Counsel David Weiss and want them to answer questions before Congress. John Schaefer, USA News.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110, guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. You shouldn't stop leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
And maybe a few other laws. We're continuing our conversation with Edward Slavslot, which is the pseudonym of Riley Wagerman, that is a young man that's been writing about the Ukraine war, living in Russia, Moscow, Georgia, the Czech Republic. He's in Europe writing about Ukraine. Well, we're going to continue the conversation here. We're learning a lot.
It really jaded me, you know, about the whole political system. So I got out.
Okay, now what publication was this?
Well, okay, that's just one of many, but I was also writing for, my main job, at the time it was this, I don't know if you've ever heard of this website, Gawker, Ernest. It was this very, how to describe it, I would even say vulgar sort of pop culture blog, and they had many sort of sub-blogs, and one of them was called Wonkette, which focused on political gossip. And it was sort of, it was very sort of left-leaning, I would have to say, in general. So I actually got my start there writing. I would go to these, you know, parties in Washington, D.C., attended by Congress members and staffers, and try to cause trouble. And, you know, it was very
You're
was
part
very
of the new media, ambush interviews, you're being...
Exactly, no, exactly.
But, I get it.
But, Ernest, listen, I was very... I wasn't mean-spirited, you know. I'm a nice guy. So
no,
I
but
was,
you
I
had
was
accent. You're, yeah, you're finding out what's what. And as you're paying attention, trying to be, you know, relay accurate information to the audience, you find out how jacked up the whole. So I was yeah, you, man. I was in my late 20s when I started this late album going, these people are freaking. You know, I didn't even learn till a few years ago what it even meant to be a sociopath, you know, or a psychopath.
Right. And yeah, I wondered, all sociopaths and psychopaths.
Exactly. I was like going, what's wrong with these people? They say stupid stuff. I mean, be proud of advertising. What a scumbag they are. And I'm like, what the crap? Yeah. They don't have any impact. They don't care. These positions attract these kinds of people. And once you realize that, man, we're up against some demons here, man. These guys are bad. So then you say, I'm done with this. I'm going on walkabout, you know, around the planet, and you wind up in Russia. So that's kind of, and then, oh, I can write, and they'll give me a job and pay me money. All right, cool. Now that's what happens. So then you get your experience going through this. At what point did you start writing on your own? Or was it because of something like Substack that even existed? Did you have your own blog? How did that, you start writing on your own? And I guess you sell stuff, or you have patrons or subscribers, or you're like, you know, feeding yourself somehow. So tell me about that transition.
Well, I ended up quitting my job at RT in the summer of 2021, basically because I was very, I didn't approve of this policy that RT had where they would platform Westerners who were upset at their governments for this, you know, COVID tyranny that was spreading around the world, but they would absolutely prohibit any kind of even modest criticism of the Russian government doing the exact same thing.
Mm.
And for me, it was a real eye-opener because I had always believed in this sort of lesser of two evils sort of view on geopolitics where, well, okay, yeah, Russia has problems, but I really think Washington is, you know, this cesspit of pure evil, and so I'm willing to be pragmatic, right? But in a situation like this where you and your family are being treated like cattle, being told that you can't go outside without a document or that your relatives have to be forcibly injected in order to keep their jobs, I don't care what Washington, D.C. is doing. I care what Moscow is doing. And I couldn't, at that point, it was impossible for me to keep working for an organization that was pretending to care about these issues, but obviously didn't. And was obviously doing it in a very cynical way. And so I quit. I left, and I just started on my own. And that's basically how I started.
Okay, so your first article, you're going, hey, I'm going to get some on Russia, or I'm going to tell the truth about, which piss off Russia, or I'm going, what was your first articles? What, you know, give me kind of your first few of, you know, who you pissed off.
Well, you know, actually, I guess my first article was actually it was an op-ed that I wrote for RT. I pitched this op-ed, and it was about just this policy, this QR code, you know, these so-called health passes being introduced by Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin, and I thought it was obviously medical discrimination, obviously backwards, obviously evil, and so I wrote this op-ed, which was, I think, very actually even-handed and even sort of playful, that just pointed out, you know, this is not okay, and Russians don't like it, and this is not okay anywhere in the world. And RT just sort of, they just said, no, we will never publish this under, you can't even edit it. I was like, well, offer some suggestions, like offer some edits, and I can meet you halfway. And they just wouldn't publish it. So it was actually published by Off Guardian, which is a great alternative media resource. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they ended up publishing it for me. And and so, yeah, I guess that was sort of my first solo Russia article.
So how are you doing? I mean, you know, are you supported? Do you get enough patrons support?
I'm very, very grateful for the financial support I get through, and it's only through Substack. I've been banned by PayPal for spreading misinformation about, you know, vaccines or whatever. Yeah, so it's only through PayPal, really, and sometimes people send me Bitcoin, but it's not very often. So I'm basically making minimum wage, but I'm grateful for the support. You know, I'm much happier doing this for minimum wage than I was working for RT for much more money.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. All right. Well, that's how they get you, man. They want to, you know, you got to protect your job. And I see this in friends, family, neighbors, people I interview, where it's all about the metrics. How many clicks you get? How much money do you have? How do you want to keep that, don't you? And they incentivize, like doctors. I saw we just did a chart that had doctors getting up to $250 per year per patient that they inoculate. And they had to get up to 75% of their patients to do it. So this incentive, we knew what was coming. We had Dr. Mikovits on a lot, and she told it. And then I found out Pfizer is doing a $1 million grant to any legislator that successfully got an exemption removed or a mandate put in. You get a $1 million grant, you know. And it's just, they're just creating a bunch of patients for pharma to freaking try and relieve symptoms they caused. It's just so insidious. So I got no love. All right. With that background, now let's get into Ukraine. I want to understand what's happening on the ground, the reality of it, because this is what we get. I am constantly having stories on Freedom's Phoenix that you have, this guy saying this about that. Scott Ritter, Ray McGovern, all these guys, and a bunch of other people reporting on, Ukraine's losing. No, Ukraine's kicking ass and Russia's on the rope.
Right.
Oh, we're going to, Maui, screw them. We'll give, we need more money for, Ukraine. Food stamps, right? We're going to cut all this. We're Democrats. We love the people. But we love Ukraine people more, certainly Zelensky, we're laundering money. So it's becoming so obvious. Same thing with the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, they needed another. You can't launder gazillions of dollars unless you got a war, okay? This is just seems to me like a just money laundering thing for they, them, those, all right? That won't leave us alone. So describe to me what is really going on militarily in occupied area, because it seems to me we got it back, and it's a freaking parking lot that they leveled, Woo, we got our bomb craters back. So I just need to know the reality of what's going on. Then we'll get into what the Ukrainian people think, what Europe thinks, what the Russian people think. But give me an overview, military kind of overview of the war. Help me out, Riley.
Yeah, well, look, I would just start by saying I don't have any love for the Kiev government, if you want to call it that. That being said, let's separate Kiev from this and just look at it from Russia's perspective, since it was Russia's initiative to launch the special military operation. So I think that we should be focusing on what did Putin state on February 24th, 2022, when they sent tanks rolling towards Kiev. What were the stated objectives? And have his objectives been met? Have they been partially met? Where are we, on this sort of what's the status of these stated goals and objectives? So Putin gave a few reasons for going to Ukraine. One of them was to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. Another one was basically Putin put it in sort of a different wording, but I'll try to summarize what he said or paraphrase. He said, NATO's eastward expansion is a direct challenge to Russia's sovereignty, and this can no longer be tolerated. He's also said that it would be impossible for Russia to allow NATO to use Ukraine as sort of an anti-Russia, right? To create a situation where Ukraine becomes a NATO stronghold and a tool used against Russia, especially because of these sort of deep historic and cultural ties. I mean, these are basically brotherly nations historically, and obviously Ukraine was part of the Russian Empire for many hundreds of years.
Okay, now I want to inject this before you get further. Okay. If they're successful and Ukraine becomes NATO, and Russia didn't launch a nuclear attack, immediately following Ukraine would be what? Georgia?
No, I don't know. Georgia's much harder. It's a much harder thing to read, I have to say. It's You know, Georgia actually has a much more, Russia actually has much more soft power in Georgia than it ever did in Ukraine. And, I mean, it's a whole other subject, Ernest. I don't know if we want to get into it, but
I'm just saying, you know, if they get Ukraine, they're not done. You know, it's just.
Okay, yeah. No, for sure. For sure. Obviously, you know, this is, yes, I would agree with that completely.
You know, and Belarus, they'll change. They'll have another coup. As much as Belarus is on Russia's side, you know, and Belarus just north of Ukraine on the Russian border and their allies. And we got the threat, Poland, oh, Belarus, they're going to come after us. We got to, you know, they're trying to create a front line or something. Well, yeah, Ukraine was as positive Russia as Belarus was. You know, they did their little, you know, revolution, colored shirt crap, whatever, infiltration, CIA, whatever the hell crap. And all of a sudden, all the young people in Ukraine, we want blue jeans and Elvis Presley, and we want to join the European Union from the frying pan into the fire. So I go, this is to think that Belarus and Georgia and some of these others are safe from NATO and Western aggression or push towards Russia is to not see what happened in Ukraine. They're not done. This is how they want to take over Russia. You know,
right.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think the ultimate goal is probably the dismantlement of Russia and to break it up into, you know, 15 or 20 different little mini states that can be more easily controlled. But just getting back to these stated goals, and the last one, important.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Is obviously the protection of the people of Donbass. And so just sort of getting back to your question about my sort of overall assessment of this conflict.
Can I, before you go into there, explain Donbass. I mean, you know, why was that important? What is that about?
Well, obviously, because that's where this has been sort of the line of contact since, 2014, when this conflict started, and the Ukrainian military controlled large portions of Donbass, and this is, you know, the ceasefire. Actually, I would have to say, before the start of this conflict, was working relatively well, although there was still periodic shelling, which is obviously unacceptable. There were civilians were being killed and maimed on both sides in some cases, and that's obviously unacceptable. But obviously, this conflict has greatly aggravated, let's put it that way, this line of contact in Donbass. And but sort of getting back to my point is, you know, if we want to look at this military operations in a sort of sober and level-headed way, all we have to do is ask, has Moscow, whether you think the war is justified or not, whatever you think about the motives or who's in the right and who's in the wrong, that's secondary, actually, Ernest. What's most important, I think, is this current situation more favorable towards, you know, creating a better tomorrow for both Ukraine and Russia than it was before the start of this conflict? And unfortunately, my current assessment is no, because none of the stated objectives have been accomplished, and in some cases, these problems that existed pre-February 24th have been exacerbated, have been made worse. And so the way that I view this conflict, unfortunately, I must report, is that I think it was very obvious that Moscow wanted a sort of Crimea-like scenario where it would be mostly bloodless. They would march to Kiev. It was sort of like a military psyop where they would hope that Zelensky's regime would just collapse. They would maybe, I don't know what their plan was after that, but they didn't want this to go on until August 2023. I think that's very, very clear, and for very obvious reasons. And so, unfortunately, I have to say, I think what we're witnessing is a very, very horrible tragedy in which Russians and Ukrainians are being slaughtered, even though Moscow is still pumping gas across Ukraine. You know, it's paying Kiev to transport its gas.
See a lot of, you know, this is not
insane, right? It's really incredible.
It means that there are oligarchs and businessmen that are running
exactly.
Everything. That's
exactly.
What it means.
Well, look, I mean, let's be honest here, Ernest. I mean, you know, war is a racket, right? And so while there's ideology and you know, these lofty slogans and ideals for the proles, it's business as usual for the, you know, the top guys on both sides. And
well, this is the same thing you start to find out. Same thing happened World War One, World War Two, every war, be it,
yes.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, Ernest.
There's
yes.
Always somebody
yes.
Making money on both sides, and certainly yes. The banks. I don't care who wins, because whoever wins has got to pay off the other guy's debt. You know,
exactly.
Well, when you said to Donbass, I want to make this clear what this means, why this is important. If you look up at the map here on the stream, you'll see the eastern part of Ukraine. Well, a lot of that, you know, that's called the Donbass. And what it means is kind of a separate area. They spoke mostly Russian. They were Russian affiliated. They were Russian, you know, family, Russian culture, Russian. And the Ukrainians, when they had this takeover and whatever civil war crap that was going on, you know, we got to hate on the Russians. Just go over and kick ass and, you know, whatever. And they abused them. They persecuted them. They did whatever. It's kind of like, you know, the Irish and Great Britain kind of thing, you know. They didn't like it. And then they started getting really aggressive, and a lot of bad things were going on. Russia is like, hey, these are our people, and a good excuse for us to protect them because it's a good excuse. So that was, you know, their reasoning for going into the Donbass was to protect, you know, the people that were supportive of Russia. So along with that was this threat that Ukraine and with the Donbass was going to be a threat to the sovereignty of Russia. And that was the big thing. Nope. And then Crimea. If you look at the bottom of the map, you'll see like this island there. It's kind of a little land peninsula thing. But you got this big island, which is their Navy base and their presence for their fleet in the Black Sea, which connected through Istanbul and Turkey, you know, goes through into the Mediterranean. That's their warm water port. If you don't have that, you know, then you got issues, you know, in the Baltic Sea, North and Ice, and, you know, NATO up there, whatever. But they go, nope, we're getting Crimea. That's for damn Skippy. So they get that. Now they don't want them to have Crimea, which is Ukraine and the U.S. It's always U.S. is bombing bridges. Ukraine. They're trying to start a third world war. They're trying to something. What are they trying to do? What is it? They think they can get Putin to set off a thermonuke or something? I mean, what are they trying to get Putin to do?
Look, I obviously any kind of civilian infrastructure that's targeted in this war, I condemn in the strongest possible way. I have no idea what Kiev is trying to do. Obviously, my presumption is that they're trying to do something very bad and destructive and anti-human. But again, I think we should go back, though, Ernest, to this larger question. Like, if we want to talk about the Donbass, the reality is that this war has been going on for, a year and a half now, and the Ukrainian military is still entrenched in Donbass. It's still entrenched in Kherson, which was annexed. I mean, not annexed, but, they'll call it annexed, but it's part of the Russian Federation now, legally. In Zaporozhye, it's the same situation. There are still Ukrainian strongholds. Ukraine still has a sliver of a territory in Lugansk. And so it's very, very strange to me that after a year and a half of this conflict, the world's second largest military can't push the Ukrainians out of not even the entire Ukraine, but just Donbass. And if this was really the number one goal, I have to say it's not been going very well. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, why is that? And so I condemn so much of what Ukraine has been doing, Kiev has been doing it again. But at the same time, it's like, what is this war, Ernest? You know, like, what is actually being achieved here? Who's actually, yeah.
Well, is Moscow, if Russia wanted to, do you think they could? I mean, if they, I don't know. Is there negotiations behind the scenes? Well, we haven't milked this conflict for enough money yet. The sanctions on Russia just made them richer. You know, they're like,
okay, so Well, here's an interesting fact that very few people talk about in English, but it's very well known in Russian language media, which is that Putin has openly admitted that the reason why, you know, the tanks that were sort of, or the sort of semi-encirclement of Kiev in the early months of the war, why Russia withdrew, it wasn't some sort of brilliant interdimensional strategy. It was because Moscow had reached a deal with Kiev. And then, you know, basically Kiev sponsors, I guess specifically Boris Johnson in the UK, but I'm assuming also Washington, basically tore up the agreement. And so what we're witnessing now is basically Russia trying to manage a war that it doesn't want to fight. And that's just the reality. That's just the sad, unfortunate reality. And there are going to be very, very serious domestic and political consequences for this reality. Because I don't think, I think most Russians at this point understand, you know, there's a difference between supporting your military and supporting, you know, understanding that a conflict doesn't really have a good ending for anyone. And in Russia, look, my son has relatives who live in the suburbs of Kiev. It's a very, very personal conflict for many Russians. Many. You know, these are cousins, brothers.
Yeah, brothers, fighting brothers, north-south,
exactly.
American
it's a,
Civil
it's
War
a really,
thing.
It's a really tragic conflict, Ernest. And I really encourage everyone listening just to ask the very simple question. Put politics aside. Put your feelings about Washington aside. I get it. I really do. But just ask, what is being accomplished here? You know, and are the people who are dying, are they the ones that we're supposed to be killing? You know, that's another question to ask. You know, why is it that not a single, why is it that Igor Kolomoisky, this disgusting Ukrainian oligarch who funded Azov, why is he still alive? Right? Why is the entire Zelensky regime just walking around in the open, no problems?
Money.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a gentleman's agreement, I think, Ernest, you know?
Okay, this is, you know, from what you've said, let me paint a scenario and see how far off I am. Russia got a promise from the West that we're not going to encroach on them and move NATO east and threaten their existence of we're not communist anymore and we're freeing up and whatever and leave us alone. Pinky swear, pinky swear, pinky swear. Then they don't. They come in and they're not done. It's Ukraine, then Belarus, then Georgia, then. You know, they just brought in, you know, Finland, Sweden. They put it in, I mean, damn Russians are putting their country next to all our military bases, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, that old joke. So, why does Russia put its country so close to our military bases?
Right. You know, so I can see, certainly even from, you know, like you get a Trump America first thing, we got Putin, you know, any politician worth their salt's going to say, you know, Russia first thing, and we're going to protect the sovereignty of. Then they see it threatened, then they certainly don't want to lose Crimea.
We'll be right back with the rest of our conversation with Riley Wagerman, a.k.a. Edward Slav Squad, here on the Free Talk Live Network in just a little bit.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it?
I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.